Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero, the Dew Sweeper. You're listening to the Tour Coach Podcast, giving you insights into golf instruction at the highest level, from on the PGA Tour to our Learning Center at Frederica Golf Club.
Joining me now on the Tour Coach Podcast, joining me on this long ride, what's turned into a 16-hour ride with my dog down to the Keys and not to my house, is Dana Dahlquist, and he for sure is the epitome of the tour coach, one of the nicest guys out there. He's had tremendous success, worked with a bunch of great players. Dana, thanks for sitting in with me, and appreciate it. I've enjoyed the opportunities over the last couple of years to talk with you a little bit and get to know you more, and looking forward to doing that more. You're doing a hell of a job out there. I know you're busy.
Well, I try to keep up with you, Tony. How are you doing?
Well, you're going to get behind then, let me tell you. But no, you put great stuff out there on Instagram. One thing I always tell folks when they, and I think I know what you'll say, but everybody's like, oh man, going to tour events teaching tour players, it's cool, man, that's got to be great. And I'm like, it's not as glamorous as everybody thinks.
That's very true. It's, you and I have been doing this for a while, and I think the longer I do it, the more I realize that, you know, for somebody to make any change or significant improvement, we got to do things away from a tournament. And I think that's probably like the older I get, the more the realization is I'm just going to stay home and do this.
Yeah, for sure. Right.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. I mean, you know, you and I are probably on the road a lot. I mean, there's no doubt. And I just think it's an interesting situation because, you know, there's not a whole lot that we can really do at a tournament outside of the fact of like, to, you know, bring support to the table. I mean, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, my personality is way much less like in a tournament. Like, I don't like to introduce new stuff at all, right? And I know there's teachers that probably maybe a little more risky at that. Chris Como and I've talked about where he said sometimes he thinks it's worth it. I mean, I don't know. I've never had much success trying something at a tournament, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've had more success seeing a guy that it wasn't great, but making him feel like he was doing it great and he believe in himself and go, you know, make some putts and get some stuff going. So, you know, yeah, the longer I do it, the more I like working away from a tournament. You know, it's just hard. You know, it's hard. And because there's lots of distractions, too. They've got family coming out or they've got their girlfriend coming out and they want to do that stuff. And
yeah.
You know, I will say that the COVID thing kind of did reduce distractions a little bit because there were less people out there.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's now this obviously falls, and this is me personally, I'm not talking about you, but like it's an interesting one because every year I think it kind of falls back to that whole scenario where, you know, I have kind of like a perfect mindset as far as what I'd love to see in a perfect world of how a golf swing should look and everything. And boy, it becomes an interesting puzzle when somebody's been out there for so long doing things uniquely that it's just very interesting to watch how a preconceived narrative of, oh, well, I did this in 1982 and therefore it works now. And it's pretty odd. I mean, you and I would look at it and go, well, it's pretty obvious you weren't doing that in 1982, but you know, it's
right
because we couldn't measure anything like we do now. But yeah, I just find it very interesting where now, I mean, we legitimately can say, well, there's no way that you actually did do that. And most of these younger guys coming up are far more orthodox in many, many ways than, you know, the guys, at least in my generation, you know, the guys in their 40s. And I think that's a little bit kind of curtails the issues, but yeah, it's just fascinating where, you know, I had a kid come out the other day. He was a very nice young man. He's a good player, beautiful golf swing. And it was neat because he knew everything that he needed to know about his spin loft and his launch angles, landing angles and everything. It was great. And I go, well, why are you here?
Right. What do I need to do?
Right. So I don't know. It's an interesting one. So yeah, I think the big thing, Tony, is just if we could literally do our job at home and then not do as much on the tournament weeks, I think that's the way things should go, or maybe they will go.
Yeah, I agree 100%. In fact, I said to Lucas this week, I said, you know, I'm like, at the Players, you had one of the best range sessions I've seen in the 5 years I've worked with you, right? Mm-hmm. And then he made the cut. He played okay, but he started off not great. And he had one day he striped it, and you know, I was like, I mean, I don't know that there's any reason for me to be there on Wednesday, but you should be ready to go by this. You know, that kind of was my thinking. And like, you know, it was nice, like this week, like had a real nice session just alone on a Monday because there was nobody there, you know?
Yeah.
I think that like trying to find those times seems to be more important than others. And what I've tried to do is I'm fortunate that I've got a veteran and then I got a couple young guys. You know, I've tried to get the veteran for them to play together because I think they can all learn something from each other. Like, but they all have different strengths. So, you know, to me, like, that's the best thing to do at a tournament week is to walk and watch them on the golf course. But, I don't do a lot of swing work or make very many suggestions. And unless, it's a panic mode where a guy's hitting it awful. And, I don't know that many of us have much success putting that. There's going to be teachers that claim that they do, but I don't see it all.
Yeah, I don't either. I have actually a question for you about that. So how responsive are the younger guys to Lucas? Because that was actually something before you even mentioned it. Do the younger players, because Lucas is probably my age or so, and he's been out there for a long time. He's been highly successful. He's, you know, one of the nicest guys out there. So are the younger guys responsive to, you know, like that amount of wisdom? I mean, do they ask good questions?
Mine are, you know, and in fact, we joke. I call him T.
Okay.
And like, you know, Monday we were doing some work and I said, I'm kind of pitching in and helping Brady Riggs out a little with Brandon Hagee because I'm on the road more than Brady and he's in Hawaii a bunch. And, you know, I said, hey, do you mind? Let's all play together in the morning.
Yeah.
So he shoots Robbie Shelton and Brady and Brandon at text and puts it all together and we play 18 holes together. And, you know, and then at Honda, you know, Robbie's really struggled as of late and I feel like he's turning a corner, but, you know, I feel like he got caught maybe chasing distance and listening to a lot of stuff and we've kind of gotten this where we've gone back to trying to do what he did when he played really good golf in college and it was great. Like, we're on the range kind of struggling at Honda and Lucas just stepped in and took over the whole lesson. I didn't really talk for 45 minutes.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And he was like, look, you can't play out here doing this.
Yeah.
Like, and you need to do this. And, you know, it was interesting. So back to your point was we're walking off and, you know, Robbie said, like, man, it's great to have a veteran willing to step in and tell you that.
That's great. That's really great. It's funny you say that because, it's interesting because there was a when the tour was at Court of All, Lucas was on the putting green and there was some chatter about, are any of the younger guys talking to guys that have been out there? And Lucas was one of the guys that was there on the putting green. And he did find it kind of puzzling that it wasn't done more often. And I think, I mean, I my idols growing up would be like, you know, Davis Love and, you know, Fred Couples and Nick Faldo. And I could just imagine if I was 19, 20, 21, you know, going onto the driving range and seeing those guys there, you know, I would try to wait by the first tee, you know, and hopefully get a game.
Well, to that point, you mentioned Davis. So, you know, there was some point a year or two ago, and, you know, I think Lucas and I were, you know, we were right going to dinner or something down at a tournament, or maybe it was down in South Florida, and I thanked him for doing it. You know, I was like, man, I just appreciate it because it makes my job easier. And I love watching my young guys grow as people and as players. And he said, well, man, he's like, all I'm doing is what Davis and, you know, those guys did for me. And he's like, you know, Davis did that to me when I was coming out. And I think that that's a cool thing about the game that we're in is that, you know, there's a portion of them that feel like carrying it on. And I have my young tour players do the same thing with my college players.
Oh, that's really good.
You know? And because, like, it's like, you know, because, like, they were the college player at one time that needed help. And then you get college players to do it to your juniors. And, like, I think that's the cool thing about the game that we're in, and it can help people. And I think, you know, I'd love your thoughts on this, but I think it does as much for the veteran player, because I got to think that being out there for 17, 18 years playing and you make money and you're playing for money and the redundancy of it, and at times probably is hollow and gets tiring, but to have a chance to do something where you can help somebody, and it probably makes you feel them feel as good as the guy they're helping.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Well, cool.
And I think the same in teaching, too. I think, at the American Express, probably something unhealthy I was eating, but I was sitting there, and Chuck Cooks walks up, and I walked up, and we sat there, and I started showing him videos of somebody.
Yeah.
And then he walked 18 holes. I think Robbie played with Andrew Landry, and he was like, I love it, but here's kind of what it's like. I like that part of what we do. The ability to call you, text you, and say, I know you're busy. You mind hopping on? Because I'm going to learn something from talking to you today.
Well,
that's kind of the cool part. And I know there's people that don't do it. And I know there's people, and we won't mention names, that think they're too cool and too smart to talk to us. But I think you can learn a lot by doing that.
Yeah, that's the one part. I could name it. I don't need to, but.
Yeah,
that the guy. Well,
it's a great show, but yeah,
right. So, but that's the cool thing. Where, yeah, it was very interesting. I think it was in St. Louis. There was a rain delay in the morning. We're all in the caddy lounge, and Butch is in there, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sitting with Robert Rock.
Yeah.
Who else? Liam. All the European guys. So the European coaches, and I'm sitting there, and they're essentially all kind of from the same school. They're all like originally Mac O'Grady guys. So, and it was funny because I think there was another Mac guy that I think I can say it now is Matt Belsham was there, but cause he's not in anymore. But at the time, there was a caddy walked by and he goes, well, I'm going to take a picture. And you should have seen Matt's face. Like, oh no, don't do that. It was pretty funny. But that's what they were doing. They were, Fleetwood's coach was there too. We're all sitting. And I remember, I think it was somebody was working with this kid, Tim, who plays on the European tour. And we were just passing the phone around, just looking at the film.
Isn't that cool, though?
Yeah, that's the way it should be. That's really the way it should be.
I've gone twice to observe Butch teach a golf school.
Uh-huh.
And, it's still like, I guess I've done 2 years in a row. COVID pushed it one of them back, but it's still one of the cooler things I've gone and done teaching, even with all the things I've been lucky to do. And, last time I get to the end, it's the end of the school, I'm going to fly back that next morning early. And, I'm kind of trying to find the right time to ask, you've been teaching all day. And I said, hey, you mind looking at these couple videos? And he was like, no. Pull your phone out. And I showed him an Andy Ogletree video, and I showed him a Robbie Shelton video, and it was cool for me, he seemed to be cool with it, and hey, like my players, when I went to him and said, hey, we kind of been struggling with it, I think they appreciated that, They're like, I'm not too, you're not too proud to go think you know everything and to ask for help.
Sure, yeah, 100%. Well, this is that weird profession where, if you look at the medical field, people will actually talk to other doctors about certain procedures or whatnot. I mean, it's just inherently common. And for whatever reason, I don't know if it's fear of loss or whatnot, people tend to, shy away from that. And, we're all good at certain things. I know I don't necessarily teach putting, let's say, or chipping or things of that nature. Not saying I can't, but I tend to defer that. But for the regular player, I'll give them a putting lesson. But if it's just somebody who's making a living at it, and I know somebody who's better at it than me, then I'll defer it. And, I think that's highly important. And I don't think that if we don't, react properly, in the long run, it won't work out for the player. And that's what we have to understand. So
no question about it. No, I agree. Well, when you talk about, like, you kind of touched on, like, hey, you know, we have the ability to, you know, measure, and we know what we think would be our ideal. So what are the traits? You know, if you had a piece of clay that's a golfer, a young player that's, you know, no physical limitations, he's strong as hell, gonna be able to pound it. What are the things that, like, you would instill in that player as far as, like, a golf swing? What are the things you like?
Well, I think number one, you know, there's an
for me to learn.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm kind of partial to a fair, kind of a centered looking swing. Then that could be interpreted in many ways. It doesn't mean that the player's not moving mass around, but I think that gets, you know, if we go on the internet armchair category where guys go, they lose their minds on stuff. But I think inherently a pretty centered looking golf swing, I think it's easier for me to self-correct that player than somebody who has unique things going on as far as the movement, right? And it's particularly when a player goes through their transition and, you know, everything's kind of on top of each other. So that's kind of the number one thing I look for, is if a player from P4 to P5 that they're, you know, kind of in a recentered position per se, and that their pressure is left at that point so that they're able to rotate, push back, and all that kind of good stuff. So that's kind of the number one thing. As far as, like, you know, particular hand path options, I think, and I have both sides of the spectrum. I have guys that are lower, I have guys that are higher. But if you said, hey, to mold it, you know, we would tend to be a little bit more where the hands are just slightly above the turn shoulder plane, let's just say. So not under it, not like Hogan necessarily, but slightly above, maybe like a Fleetwood or a Adam Scott type hand path. And then I think the other piece is that a player is able to, you know, have, I would say, the least amount of rate of closure on the face. So that does bring in a little bit more of a complex conversation, but as far as not having the club face rotate about itself in a haphazardly way, like those are like the main things. And from there, you know, it turns into more of a vanity thing. You know,
sure.
I don't think that beyond that point, I mean, I have some players that, you know, might have a little more bowed wrist, some players that play from an extended wrist, but they tend to match those things up. But just some neutrality in there is a good thing.
Right.
And yeah. And as far as impact dynamics with a driver, it's all relative to speed. So I tend to have most my guys tend to stay about 1 to 2 up. If they're players, if they're longer driver guys, they're hitting 6-7 up. If they're a female player, they're between 2 to 4. And all within the context of still having a pretty stable axis of rotation. So they're not, you know, people think hitting up, they're going to tilt back and swing out. Like, that's not in the program. So, but that in all essence is kind of what we're kind of looking for, at least on my end of the spectrum.
I love that. And I mean, I wanted to hear that because you've had tremendous success and guys play their ass off. And you know, we come from different sides and different areas. I just wanted to see how it compared, you know? And,
yeah. But I would imagine you're pretty close to the same from what I've seen with your teacher.
I like it centered, pretty centered, right? You know, doesn't mean I don't have some guys get more pressure behind it. You know, I've done some of that. You know, I've done a fair amount of stuff with Dr. Scott Lynn, and he's kind of a big part. But, like, when they test those people that are way more left side, like for a right-handed player, I kind of tell him, like, I'm not really going to do that, you know, they guess that, you know, like, I still like them centered, but a little bit more behind it. And, you know, for me, I don't talk about rate of closure much because, I mean, it's just not my lingo. But, like, I always talk about, to me, guys that are really good players have a real quiet club face going through the ball. And I use Lucas as an example. Like, he hits a pretty big draw, right?
Yeah.
But if you show a kid on video who's a good player, but that face is kind of flinging through there, like, you show Lucas is hitting a bigger draw than that kid, but the face isn't flinging over there all the way.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, I'd say we have, and, you know, like, I've got guys that draw it more, and I've got guys that fade it. But, you know, if I was putting a perfect player together, it would be, you know, I like a good hip turn into the right hip, you know, if they're able to do that, and a center pivot and, you know, and a quiet face going through. And then, you know, and then kind of go from there, you know, with what yeah. they're able to do and what they already do, you know. Frustrates me when I see some kids. I've had some kids that come to me and, you know, kids are decent little, and everybody, you know, kid had a shitty grip and a real bent, you know, shut face at the top, and they just told him didn't change it because, well, Dustin Johnson's does that. You know, I'm like, well, that's, you know what I'm saying? Like, you see that, yeah. right? And I'm not picking yeah. on some teachers, but like, well, this kid ain't Dustin Johnson. Like,
yeah.
And I would be smart enough, I think, if DJ came to me, I wouldn't try to change him. But,
yeah.
like, this kid was a, and DJ doesn't have a shitty grip.
yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So, you know, so it's interesting. I mean, I was just curious what you thought. What about influences? Who were your big influences on your teaching?
Well, I mean, early on, obviously, O'Grady, and, you know, I spent a fair time with Bobby Laskin, who's, you know, still a good friend. And, you know, here in Long Beach, we have other teachers, Jamie Mulligan, and so I spent a little time around him. But I think those are, like, the early on ones. And, you know, lately, you know, the past, like, gosh, how many years is this? Let's say 12 years of teaching tour caliber type players. You know, had a stint there with Mike and Andy, the Stack and Tilt guys, which is kind of a divergence
yep.
from Morad. And then
okay.
Chris Como, Kwan, Mike Duffy, you know, Scott, another guy. That's more like in the biomechanics world. And what's interesting,
yep.
and this is just where my brain goes with things, is like how to mold what I did when I was, you know, under Morad into what's going on with current science, and then trying to dumb it down into a way that's usable. And that's
right.
always been kind of the plight, because, you know, I'm not inherently what I would consider to be a smart guy. Like, I don't try to do that. I try to make sure that I'm relatable, at least. And I think what's important is that when we start getting into, you know, graphs and stuff, it just doesn't correlate over to, you know, the people we talk to. And I think that's where things have gotten a heck of a lot better. But even
yeah.
TrackMan, I mean, when TrackMan came out and we're using on the range, people look at us like, well, you're crazy, because, you know, it's really complex. Well, you know, they dumbed it down when they took VSP and made it swing plane, and HSP made it swing direction, and they started making it more usable for us and players so that they can perform better. And
right.
at the end of the day, it's ironic to, you know, now go on Instagram, and probably what is the most coveted videos that people like are watching, you know, Bob Goldby and, you know, old swings of Gary Hallberg and what they did, and see how relevant it is. You know, I think that's what's really cool. So, you know, at the end of the day, golf is golf. You don't need to plot it around the golf course and the center of the face and make it more putts. And at least in our world, it's, you know, it sounds, you know, Tony, you and I are looking for similar things, but we just communicated.
Right.
And
absolutely.
That's what's awesome.
That's what the beauty of teaching is to me, you know, and I think, you know, that's why I wanted, sometimes I do these podcasts because, like, I'll bring on somebody I know people want to hear. Sometimes
yeah.
I bring somebody on because I want to know more about you because you're successful, and I've enjoyed the opportunity to talk to you a few times out there, and I think you can always learn from people that are successful at what they do, and, you know, just think it's, you know, it's kind of one of the cool things. Like, I came up under Hank Johnson, who was a great, you know, he's a top 50 guy, big golf digest teacher, and
mm-hmm.
Tom Ness and Mark Wood and Wayne Glenn, they, you know, they were kind of more golf machine-y guys.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
the same type of path like you talked about. So now I find myself using, you know, Colby Touye, who's a great fitness guy out there. And
yeah.
and then using Dr. Scott Lynn and trying to figure out how to use the stuff that they're doing and having success and make that make
right.
sense with what I learned how to do.
Yeah. Yeah, Colby's got a pretty impressive stable, doesn't he?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. You know, and I'll say, like, I tell people all the time, he's been the biggest influence on my teaching in the last 3, 4, 5 years.
Oh, and that's awesome.
Because he's helped me make people better teaching the stuff I like to teach away
right.
from the golf ball, where they're doing stuff with bands and different things that he's helped me kind of expand my ways to help people.
That's awesome.
And it's been cool, and I've learned a lot. And it's been fun kind of taking Scott Lynn and him and putting them in a room together. You've got a coon ass from Louisiana, and then you got a, you know, and then you got a scientist from Canada, and then you got a fat Italian guy all in the room trying to figure it out, you know, and coming from different perspectives. So it's been interesting, you know, doing that. you know, all of those guys have been really cool. Like teaching juniors and developing young people is what I love to do most. And to have them be able to come to like a place like Frederica and spend time with 16-year-olds that are trying to get good is kind of a cool deal.
You know? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Most definitely.
Another question I'm going to ask you, like, you know, you talked about, like, you do better, we do better with them if we were doing it off the road. Do you get tired of the traveling, and do you think we can eventually get players to understand that we don't need to be out there as much?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there is a business model to be out there, and I think that inherently needs to change. I think, you know, if we go back to this look at the Jack Grout scenario, right? Jack did just fine without Jack there. So,
he did okay.
Yeah, he did okay. So I think we tend to, two things occur. Either we feel like we're going to lose a player because they're not going to have the insight to do something, so we'll ask someone else. That's inherently true, and I'll say it. But the second part is that we either didn't communicate enough in the off season, or make a precedent that the player needs to be in the off season, and we need to be with them at some point in time, and then set up a conceptual framework of an idea that the player needs to develop. So whether it be practice routines or something mechanical, or you know, even something as simple as like, hey, you're doing a change to your equipment, you need to do that also in the off season. So you try to correlate the two. Like, if you're successful hitting one driver for an entire season or two seasons, and then you're going to switch drivers mid-season, that's kind of a problem. Right? It doesn't really work. And therefore, that the instruction side should be kind of held in the same regard. And unfortunately, that's not always the case. But you see, you know, a driver change, a putter change, a wedge change, an iron change. Oh, we're going to switch teachers. And it just gets, you know, nothing ever gets to become solidified to the fact that I can perform at a high enough level. So that's what's kind of unique about the position we're in, is at some point that needs to, in my mind, at least happen.
Right.
But I think because of the ease of access and everybody saying yes to everybody, it becomes, you know, too easy to go to a range at a tour event, you know, week in and week out. So, and some guys, it's like having somebody there. You know, I understand that. But I think in my regard, you know, heck, I'm busy at home. And, you know, given 6 to 8 lessons a day here, is it really a benefit for me or a benefit for the player? I don't know. That's the head scratcher. So, I don't know. What's your thought on that?
Well, I think that originally, I think that, like, when you first go out, it's the fear that if you don't go out there and they struggle, they're going to listen to somebody else, and then you're going to get fired, right?
Yeah.
And then I think, I mean, I certainly fell into that, and I think it's like you become a victim of your own deal of you're out there so much, they kind of expect you to be out there, then you don't know how the hell to get out of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, I'm on board 100%. I don't know that, I mean, I think there's times it's really good to be out there, and I think you can do some good. But as far as like what you and I really love to do, which is teaching them, and so I don't know that we do a ton of teaching there. I think we do coaching. I don't know that we do very much teaching when we're at a tournament.
Agreed. Yeah, 100%. And that's you know, to be fair, Tony, that wasn't my forte 10 years ago.
Right.
I was trying to problem solve and not coach. And so learning lessons on probably both sides as far as the player, you know, listening or the teacher teaching.
Yeah.
But, you know, you kind of learn the hard way.
But I think I'm the exact opposite. I think, I heard somebody comment about me, and it kind of insulted me at first. It was like, I have great soft skills and great at communicating and great at coaching. I kind of took that as I wasn't very good at the X's and O's and all of that. You know, learned that, like, you can't be great at everything, right? And so I've surrounded myself with people that are better at that. And I think that I'm obviously more than adequate, and I'm always trying to learn.
Amen.
And I think that's also why there's some teams of people that work well together, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
Well, this has been fun. One, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy at home.
Yeah, anytime.
Two, kudos on all the success.
Thank you, and yourself included.
And we need to go have a beer or something sometime when we're out there.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Tour Coach with Tony Ruggiero. If you enjoyed this, make sure to hit subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you are listening to this podcast. You can stay up to date because we have weekly episodes coming your way with fascinating people in the world of golf instruction at the highest level. Make sure to subscribe and stay tuned. If you want to learn more about Tony, head over to dosweepersgolf.com to get all the details on what he's up to. Maybe you want to see him, grab a lesson, or go to one of his camps, pick up his book, Lessons from the Legends. You can do that there. If you want to see Tony in action with some videos and other content, head over to golfsciencelab.com/Tony to get more info there. This episode was powered by the Golf Science Lab and was edited, mixed, and produced by Just Hit Publish Productions.
We go into year two of the Tour Coach. It wouldn't be possible without the support of all our sponsors. And I've had some great ones. And one of the things that I'm most proud of in my career and in my business is the fact that all of my relationships here and all these sponsorships have been long time, long withstanding relationships, haven't jumped from sponsor to sponsor and manufacturer to manufacturer. And I've always prided ourselves in special relationships and when people work together, support each other, and we've all put out great products for the benefits of everybody else. So I want to give a special thanks to these folks that have been with me for such a long time. And that would be the folks at Srixon, Cleveland Golf, and Zexio. Couldn't ask for a better manufacturer to be aligned with. And not only do they put out great product and great support, but they're first-class people and they believe in what we're doing here on the Tour Coach and with the Dew Sweepers and also Vineyard Vines. Ian, Shep, TJ, and all the folks at Vineyard Vines, hard to keep me looking good, but they do a fantastic job. And they're like family. They support everything on the Dew Sweepers. And we're so proud to be affiliated with and support the folks at Vineyard Vines. So if you're out there, you're listening to the Tour Coach, please support our sponsors, Srixon, Cleveland Golf, Zexio, as well as Vineyard Vines. And keep listening and keep enjoying hanging out with us here on the Tour Coach.